Greetings, my friend. This is the brain of TV's Pinky in the Brain. And you are listening to the Nerdcast. But what you're really listening to are subliminal messages saying, I will obey brain. I will obey brain. I will obey brain. I will obey brain. Yes!
Welcome back, everybody. It's the Nerdcast episode 141. I'm your host, Iggy, along with co-hosts Adam and Tyler. And we're back. We missed last week, but we're excited to be here.
What up?
A lot of exciting things to talk about. We've already dove deep into the action blockbuster of, I guess, next movie. I don't know when it's even coming out, but we'll get to it in a little bit. But one thing I wanted to bring up first.
3 weeks away.
Is it only 3 weeks away? Okay, we'll get to it in a sec. We'll get into it in just 1 minute then. But one thing I wanted to bring up first was actually a huge, huge social issue on the day we're recording. Saudi Arabia is lifting their ban on letting women drive. And I just thought that's a cool shout out that we should say, woo, you know, progress in some of these countries. So anyways, huge, huge news there. Otherwise, I guess we should start with, hey, what's going on, guys? We haven't chatted in a while.
Dude, Destiny, that's all that's going on. That's all you need to know about. Important things are happening today. I'm taking time out. I was late to the podcast because I have very important things that need to be done.
I had the day off today and I played Destiny pretty much all day. So, yeah.
So I'm finally getting still into Destiny.
I still need to find a good clan so I can actually do things. But other than that, I'm having fun.
I got you, bro.
I went to a dinner thing on Saturday and it was at this person, their new house. And so they went down to the basement where one of the roommates was down there and he was playing Destiny 2 on like a 104-inch screen on a projector. And I was like, all right, I'm pretty much there ready to buy it. But he was on the PlayStation also. Everybody I know that has it for the PlayStation. So I guess it's time for me to go buy the PlayStation 4 again and pick up Destiny 2 along with it.
I'm still super tempted to buy it this coming month when it comes out on PC just because of how good the demo looked, but I'm pretty deep in now. On not as deep as Adam. what's your light level, Adam?
Well, my power level for
power level. Sorry,
my Titan is 292. My Warlock's 294, and my Hunter is only 288. So.
So all three of your characters are higher power level than my one character.
Once you get the one there.
Where are you at, Tyler?
You can transfer your high level guns over.
I just got to I just broke the 80s today. So like I'm at 284, 285.
Oh, well, there you go. See, now you can combine three rare equipment mods to make one legendary mod. And that gives you +5 power for.
Whatever, I already did all that.
You put that on. Okay, good. Good, good, good. It's what you need.
So I'm having a good time though. It's fun. I haven't done the raid yet though. I've heard that's pretty cool.
It's dope. So, and then on top of it, it changes the order with which things occur every week. So sometimes the last thing you need to do before the boss, like this week, it's the first thing you do when you go into the raid. So it's in a different order each time. So it keeps it kind of fresh, which is pretty interesting, I think.
So as exciting as Destiny 2 is, there's so much to talk about this week. I know you guys want to cover a lot of Destiny 2. But really, the thing that I was really excited to talk about, which I think is huge, huge news. So I went to see Kingsman this weekend. And no, unfortunately, my MoviePass card has still not shown up yet. So I went and I paid out of pocket for Kingsman. I was pretty excited for it.
I guess so. Good God.
Okay, the Cambodia scene. That's all I've got to say when you do see it, Adam. So. But the trailer that opened it up was probably the most absurd thing I've ever seen. And I mean, there are some absurd action movies out there, but Geostorm starring Gerard Butler. And well, I mean, the cast is actually just stupid long. You got this?
Oh yeah. No. So the cast would like, this would be people that you would easily recognize, you know, in a movie. I mean, there's a lot of people that, you know, people I don't recognize, so other folks might, but you got Gerard Butler, Ed Harris, Daniel Wu, Jim Sturgis, Andy Garcia, Mayor Winningham, Richard Schiff, And then it goes on from there. There, and the cast is huge. There are so many people in this movie. But like, as I was watching the trailer, I'm like, how do you get? I mean, Gerard Butler, I kind of understand. He makes some questionable movie choices, but like, Andy Garcia is usually pretty solid. Jim Sturgis is usually pretty solid with what he picks. I haven't seen Mare Winningham in anything in a long time. Like, what? How is this the movie she decides to like jump back into everything with? And then Ed Harris and Daniel Wu, like, those guys can pick whatever movie they want, like, to be in. They're not, you know, hurting for a paycheck or anything. So it's just, I don't get it.
Yeah, and Richard Schiff, like, he takes his craft very seriously. Like, I've heard a lot of interviews with him. I'm a big fan of his from the West Wing.
So the reason we're freaking out about this giant cast for this movie, if you're not familiar with the trailer for Geostorm, it is like The Day After Tomorrow meets an action thriller. It is a movie about where we have a network of satellites that have webbed around the world to control the weather, and somebody is using it as a weapon to attack cities across the world. And it looks terrible. I don't even know. We were talking about it before we started recording. Who greenlit that project? Like, who read that script and said, let's give somebody money to make this? Whoever did that does not need to be in the industry anymore.
No, somebody was sitting on the internet reading through conspiracy theories, and they got across one where, you know, people were talking about chemtrails controlling the weather and all these satellites that were launching obviously are going to be controlling the weather. And they read it, and their immediate thought was not, there are a lot of crazy people out there. Their immediate thought apparently was, that's a fucking blockbuster movie right there, buddy. Let me tell you, I'm going to sit down and write a script about this idea. I don't understand.
I was mind blown, like, watching that trailer. And now I get it. I've gone to see Kingsman 2, Golden Circle. I get it. There's not one part of that movie that's really like, okay, this is probably going to happen in real life as well. It's just an absolutely fun action blockbuster that capitalizes on everything the first one did well. Just, you know, like typical sequel fashion, doubles up on anything that the first movie did well. I get it. But really, Geostorm, like, I don't even know what to say about this movie. We'll definitely have to link to the trailer in the post we make, but I'm just blown away. Hopefully my movie pass is showing up by the time this comes out, because if it has, I'm going to see Geostorm in theaters, and I'm going to share all the spoilers on the podcast. But I am so excited. This is why I got movie pass, so I can go see shit like this and be like, why?
Well, yeah, and it's like that article I shared with you guys about, you know, movies getting made, but not only getting made with these huge budgets. Like, if this movie had a $30 million budget, you'd be like, okay, sure, it'll make some money, like, no big deal. But this movie probably has an $80 to $100 million budget. Like, I have no idea. I was looking on the IMDb, and I couldn't find it. But I guarantee you it's got a huge, ridiculous budget. And you'd be like, you know, it gets back to you again. Not only did somebody greenlight this script, somebody went ahead and was like, and you know what, I'm gonna write a giant check for it.
Yeah, I don't know, the people who, maybe it'll do well in China, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out what the budget was, and all I found was that apparently back in December they went back for reshoots and brought on Jerry Bruckheimer. So, I mean, that tells you everything.
The reshoots alone
cost $15 million.
Yeah, cost $15 million. The reshoots alone, I'm reading that right now, cost $15 million. The highlights of the article that I said, yeah, it's hard to find the exact total, but the highlights of the articles are talking about how much the studio is gambling on this film. So that means the budget's got to be big, especially when you bring in Bruckheimer and spend $50 million alone on reshoots. Oh, my gosh. Who thought? Who this does not break $100 million. Like, this is not in the box office. Who thought it would? I just don't know. I can tell you right now, Fantasy Movie League, do not put it on your list. Do not put it on there.
It depends on how much. I mean, that might be a week three winner for like best value, because I can see it's like cost dropping precipitously very quickly.
Now, you bring up another good point. As much fun as we're having with Geostorm, you shared an article with us this week. Movie budgets are too big. And it was from Screen Rant, and the title of it was actually Hollywood's Box Office Problems Are Its Own Fault. And it's talking about, we've had some big winners, and we're coming off a huge winner right now, so it's hard to really look at it in the grand scheme of things, because it is a massive success. Now, the number one grossing horror film of all time now. And it still continues to it's just doing great at the box office. And we saw success with Wonder Woman, obviously, was a huge one to start the summer. But really in between, I mean, even Spider-Man with good numbers was not what we've seen in the past. Pirates of the Caribbean failed with a $230 million budget. $230 million. And even Transformers lost money. I mean, we're at what, Transformers 20 now or whatever it is, but they're starting to lose money. Obviously, the only movie that deep in the franchise that makes money still is Fast and Furious. I think that brought in worldwide another like $1 billion, but it's ridiculous. We're getting it. The article makes a great point about how it used to be a big deal when somebody was handed $100+ million to go make a movie. Now that's normal. Now we're joking about Geostorm, but we all know that probably had more than $100 million in its budget.
Well, some of the things that I liked about it is the article broke down not just gross, but net gross as well. So when you look at what they spent versus what they made, and then it broke it down farther by percentages. And I think that's a much more telling story. Yeah, Wonder Woman made more money than it has, but it is already crushing it percentage to budget wise. Like the amount of money it brings in compared to what they spent is, you know, pretty ridiculous. So even in raw numbers, Wonder Woman's going to make more money, but it is a better value for the studio. And I also really, really liked them talking about Blumhouse. So the article does a really good job talking about Jason Blum and kind of his strategy around movies where, you know, yeah, they make a bunch of movies and a lot of them go straight to, you know, straight to video and DVD. We're going to make our money off people renting these or buying them low cost. But then a bunch of others, you know, all the Paranormal Activities, all the Insidious movies, stuff like that, they make for relatively low budgets and make money off of them. I mean, you know, it really is it's a completely profitable studio. It's fantastic. And, you know, it makes you wonder where Hollywood kind of got the idea that if every movie we make is the most expensive movie, then more people are going to go see it. It seems like they're kind of stuck in that idea. And I don't know where it came from.
Well, the article points out, yeah, Get Out, 3,800% earning, like their profit. It, at the time the article was released, I think it references something that it was like through last Thursday or Friday's numbers, was at 661% already on its earnings. So it already earned 661% what it cost. But it did look at the biggest losers of the year too. And number one was King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. And they make a couple pokes at it in the article. They're like, who greenlit this movie? And that's another one though, when we're talking about the cast for Geostorm, I mean, this was one that had Guy Ritchie behind it. And all of us were talking about it when we started, you know, we were podcasting again back in May or June when it was coming out, that as much as we all love Guy Ritchie films, all of us were kind of like, we're not going to go see this one. And I mean, looked terrible. But yeah, the biggest loser, I guess would be the way to put it, of the year so far is King Arthur, with Valerian in at number two. Monster Trucks at number three, which I don't think I've even heard of Monster Trucks.
And no, it's where a kid finds a monster and it actually works as his engine in his truck, and it can like.
I remember seeing it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, like I think.
It looks terrible.
Hayden Christensen, so.
Okay.
The lead in that one.
But the big on there was, and this is just domestic too, by the way. So some of these movies made back globally, because on the bottom 10 list, I guess would be a way to put it, was number 7 was Transformers, 8 The Mummy, 9 Pirates of the Caribbean, 10 even Smurfs, which I didn't even realize I guess that's a third or fourth Smurfs movie we've had now. So globally, The Mummy did fantastic with Tom Cruise's pull overseas. We all know Transformers did fantastic in China as well. So I think it made money when you look at global numbers. But domestically, these are huge tentpole franchises. I mean, Transformers is a big deal. We make fun of the franchise all the time, but we always talk about it. It makes tons of money. It's a huge moneymaker. And they said it lost 40% domestically on a $217 million budget, and Pirates of Caribbean losing 25% on a $230 million budget for a fifth Pirates movie. How many years after the fourth one? I mean, we're talking probably the longest gap between Pirates movies, and they gave it $230 million.
Yeah, I mean, you say that at the same time, like, Hollywood, for the most part, when it comes to big money, is adverse to risk. And, like, you throw those numbers out there, but when it's all said and done, the entire Transformers movie franchise, the budget, and I don't know if that's going to include, I don't know if that's production budget or with marketing, because marketing would skew this a ton, but they've spent just under $1 billion to make all the movies. So all, what, one, two, three, four, five of them. So $972 million. And the total worldwide box office is $4.4 billion. So they've more than quadrupled their money on the budget of those.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're doing all right, that's for sure. But still, when you look, I think the article points out some great things, is that they're mad. We're talking about MoviePass just a minute ago. I got on the card. AMC's freaking out about MoviePass, but some of the studios are actually starting to worry about it as well, blaming other things, you know. But when you really look at it, the article just makes some good points that, you know, they're spending a lot more than they used to, so it's harder to earn that back in... And the quality, it's not there. It's not the same movies. I feel like I don't want to judge it and say the quality is not completely there for across the board, because there's a lot of movies I didn't go see because the quality didn't appear to be there, from my opinion. So I'm going to the theater less, at least to this point, because nothing's enticing me as much as it used to.
Well, yeah, it also gets into, you know, those highest cost movies where, you know, Terminator 2, Titanic, like, they were those really big movies. They weren't a fifth Terminator or a fifth Transformers. I mean, you know, like, there's a difference there. Or fifth Pirates of the Caribbean, like, these were, you know, the occasional sequel. Terminator 2 obviously had a huge budget at the time, but I mean, God, that movie made a ton of money, comparatively, even. And then when you look at what it continued to do, I know it was the first movie my aunt and uncle bought in DVD when they got their surround sound system, because it was like, you know, the sound and everything, the THX and all the stuff they did, it was so fantastic for that film. So, like, those were the movies that were those big. This is the movie that's cost the most to make, and people were excited about that. But I just don't see that anymore when the movie that, you know, was the most expensive to make this year was Pirates 5. Like, it's lipstick on a pig almost. And I enjoyed the Pirates movie. So, like, it, you know, I enjoyed the most recent one. I'll probably buy it, but it just doesn't have the panache of some of the other films that have kind of been that high cost.
Well, and I mean, I don't know. It's tricky because there's a lot of really great fun blockbusters that get a lot of money spent on them, but I don't know if the ratio of bad to good has tilted, or if we're just more aware of it now because of how big the numbers have got. But I mean, it's always been this way. It's very rarely that the big movies, the big tent pole, spend a ton of money, 15 people have their hand in the pie, kind of like movies are the big winners. Like, you know, the big, what I want to say, like, they're also not the critically acclaimed ones. I don't know if that's... I mean, like, last year, let's see. Like, last year's Best Picture nominees, now that they're up to, like, you can have almost 10 of them, I bet you not a single one of them had a budget of higher than $100 million. But I also
I think of movies like Moonlight, La La Land.
But I also bet none of them also made more than, outside of probably... La La Land, I bet none of them probably made more than $200 million too. So, like, there's not a lot of money in prestige movies. Like, I don't know. I guess it's tricky. I guess they're doing the math, finding that balance between how much more do we need to spend to make enough to make it worth the while? Because you say that, but then again, not every movie is Get Out. There's plenty of movies that you spend $20, $30 million on and it makes $50 million. Well, let's spend $200 and make $250 and then still get...
Right, but in the end, $200 to make $250, that's $2 to make $2.50. Whereas if I spend $25 million and I make $50, I've spent $1 to make $2.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, they're going to spend the movie on production anyway, and there's only so many movies that are going to come out in a year. Like, yeah. Most of the really big companies, it's like, we can't have a movie come out every week, so I would rather... It's not like... I don't know if it's so much they want the return on the dollar, the highest percentage return on the dollar, as much as they want, I want the 50... I'll spend how much ever I want to make the bigger number, I guess. I guess the return's bigger. Because I'm looking now, I think the highest budget for an Academy Award nominated for Best Picture last year looks like it was probably, I'm going to guess, Arrival.
Yeah, Arrival would be my guess. But 40, while you're looking at that, to talk of kind of about what you guys are talking, and it's a good point, because even though, like you said, Adam, even though it's I spent $2 to get $2.50 back, as opposed to spending $1 to get $2 back, the in number of $2.50 is bigger. And that's what people pay attention to. So that's what the studios are getting attention for. That's what's putting investors in their back pocket. That's what's sending people to the box office. Well, actually, it's not what's sending people to the box office, but it's what is projected to be sending people to the box office. But then comes full circle, I guess, to the problem there too. So plenty of great points on all sides.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, I think the thing is you don't look for that. I don't know if studios are looking for the biggest percentage, because it's not like it's a long-term investment. It's a very fixed shelf life of like spend this much, and then get this big return on it. And if I make 10 movies for $1 million and make $2 million on each of them, you know, I got back my, I made a profit of $10 million, or I could just make one movie for $200 million and make $50 million back. And percentage wise, it's terrible, but I can only make so many movies a year. Why not just throw it all that money at the wall and see what happens? So. But I, like you said, with Blumhouse, there's something to be said for let's just make a ton of movies for super cheap and then see what happens. So, and there's been a lot of studios over the years that have done that. But yeah, it looks like the biggest budget for an Academy Award last year was Arrival at 47. And then the biggest moneymaker was La La Land. And it made $445 million on $30 million. But it was also...
That's a good read. That's a good
it was a pretty big deal. So
that was that's a pretty high earning for a Best Picture nominee. They're not normally that high. That's
Arrival made 200, and Hidden Figures made 231. Lala made 445. None of the others made over 100, but also none of the others spent more than 47. So,
but it brings to a good point. Arrival is an acclaimed. It is one of those movies that I think transcended both boundaries. It's not only acclaimed, but it was a big deal kind of not Transformers big, but it was still a big deal science fiction movie. This isn't just a plain drama set, you know, with anything. There was definitely special effects and everything in that, and they still managed to do it for $47 million. Yeah. Not $230 million for a pirate ship. But I don't know. It's a good point. The best point on the pirates thing is they'll throw as much money as they want to at it because, like you said, it's already returned, the franchise itself has already returned $4 billion. Not to mention, and that's just the movie earnings. You got the theme park stuff. You got everything else going on with Pirates of the Caribbean. Disney makes a fortune off of that. And Disney's prime example of the re-release of the movies on Blu-ray and DVD. So you got like the Sapphire editions and all that stuff. So I don't know. They make a lot of money with it, but interesting article nonetheless. It was over at Screen Rant again, talking about that. Of course, great example coming up in just a few weeks, our excitement for Geostorm there. But since we're talking about movies, we talk about it every week. Aaron, one of our former movie reviewers, is playing along with us three in Fantasy Movie League. And we just wrapped up week 4. And Adam's doing a little fist bump there because he is the first one to get 2 wins for the season. So he's got the second win wrapped up there. And he did it by gambling on it again. The three of us, Adam, Aaron, myself, and Tyler, did not pick it. And Adam added it in there again, and that seemed to be the edge.
Oh, yeah, totally the edge. I mean, it was, what, second on the weekend. So you had Kingsman at $39 million, it at $29 million, and then the Ninjago, Lego Ninjago movie at $20 million. So, I mean, it holding strong against a kids movie. We haven't really had a, you know, kind of a big kids movie in a little while. So I honestly was expecting Ninjago to do a little bit better, but, you know, it holding strong did drop 50%, but still almost $30 million for its third week. That's pretty good.
For a horror movie too. Like, this isn't just like, it's, we're talking about like, you know, Bloom and all these things, and it's the horror movies. That's $30 million in its third week. That's crazy. And it's second in the box office.
Right. Most of them would be happy to have earned $30 million in 3 weeks. Like,
we're not even to October yet.
Numbers, right. Yeah.
We're still in September, so we're not even to October yet, the prime time to go see these movies. And it will still be at the box office through, you know, at least early October, probably the whole month, because it's the right month for movies that.
Yeah, so I'd write it through Halloween for sure. For sure.
But but you bring up a good point. I think the three of us, we gambled on Lego Ninjago, which wasn't a terrible gamble. It just didn't pay off to the level of it. But we gambled on that because exactly, we hadn't seen anything targeted at the kids in a few weeks. And at least since the start of this Fantasy Movie League season, 4 weeks. So we all went with it, did all right, but it wasn't quite to the level of it. But it was it was a huge, huge week. You did pull out ahead with 73 million to Tyler's 65 million for second place. And then I pulled 60 for third. And Aaron, who dominated us last season, finished fourth in this week with 57. But that puts the season standings of, let's see here, season standings of Adam on top at 318 million with Aaron in second at 312 million. I'm at 304 and then Tyler's at 272. So still close race with, what do we got? 9 weeks left. So we still got a lot of time to figure out this season, and we got some big blockbusters coming in too.
Some big swings.
Yeah, I need some big because like my one mistake week was the week that was big dollars, and every week since then I've done really well, but it's been like, woo, 60 million total or 70 million total, and that's not fantastic. I don't know, my estimates that I have for my box office coming this week's not a whole lot better. Like, hopefully, I don't know. I think Kingsman, we'll see. I don't know. I think the best anyone could do this weekend is maybe 90 million, maybe 100 million, based on, like, what I've guessed at. So I don't think it's going to be a whole lot better.
And that's for Fantasy Movie League, not the actual movie itself making it. So.
Oh, no. I mean, yeah, total, yeah.
Yeah, it was just clearing up for the
remarkable weekend.
Just clearing up for the audience there, but I, as I mentioned, I didn't have my movie pass yet, so I paid and went to see Kingsman, and I was really hoping you guys would have seen it so we could talk about it this week.
I was gonna see it on Sunday, and then some stuff came up, and I didn't get around to it. So
you guys have let me down. This is the one time I went to see the movie, and you guys didn't. And
yeah, you don't get to scold us, Iggy.
right.
How many movies have we not been allowed to talk about over the last like decade because you waited and waited?
I don't know about decade. That's going back pretty far there.
It's been closer to a decade than not.
So anyways, Kingsman was pretty good. So you guys should check it out. If you like the first one, you'll like this one. My biggest complaint would be obviously it falls into the total problems that sequels typically see with, hey, this did really well in the first one. Let's do that times 10 now. Felt like it leaned a little bit on that at times. But there was definitely some great scenes. All I'll say is Cambodia. So when you guys do see it, it's fantastic. There's a lot of fun to it. Some good laughs. And as Matthew Vaughn typically does, he has at least one shock value moment that he went with again. So never fails there. That's for sure.
Do we get more Mark Strong?
You get a lot more Mark Strong in this one. Right. You get a lot of Mark Strong.
Super.
And it's fantastic. You get Mark Strong singing John Denver. So that's what matters. And you get Elton John. You get Elton John. That's already out there. So not too big on it's not really a spoiler. You get him pretty early in the movie. But Elton John's fantastic in it. Like, he's just phenomenal. Is he
playing a character? Or is he playing Elton John?
He's playing Elton John. And he's like pissed off at times, so he's just like swearing and yelling and all this stuff, and it's fantastic. Elton John's cameo is fantastic in it, and it's through the entire movie too. Like, he's not just, hey, here's a little Elton John bit. So but yeah, plenty of Mark Strong. I think as you saw from the trailers, you get Colin Firth back, and then
Okay, I have to ask one question, and we have to pause for a second because I'm gonna need you to answer it.
I'll shake my head one way or the other. So that's
gonna no, because I'm gonna react to it no matter what. Okay. I'm gonna ask you a question, and it's gonna be a spoiler, and I'm pretty sure I know the answer to it. I haven't looked it up, but
yes, Tyler, yes.
Do they kill like Roxy in the first like fucking 15 minutes of the movie?
I can't answer that. I'm just not gonna answer it.
Because if they do, because it looks from all the trailers like that totally happens, and if it does, I'm super upset by it. Yeah, motherfuckers.
I don't know. You have to. I guess the audience will have to check it out to see. But there's definitely some things that go down the start of that movie. They don't waste any time at all getting into the movie. There's like before they even roll the credits. Really, they have a huge sequence at the beginning, and then it goes straight into it. So. Your villain is, I think even more of a campy villain than the first one. So a lot of exciting things with it. It's fun. It's stupid fun. That's exactly what it sets out to be. It knows what it is, and it's exactly what it was. So number one at the box office last weekend, looked projected to get number one again. It's not a lot of huge coming out. I think American Made is the biggest thing this weekend with Tom Cruise. I don't know. So one thing that's not actually dated yet or anything like that, but it's looking pretty exciting. They announced it here this week. Kumail Nanjiani and John Cena are going to do a buddy cop film together. So you guys ready for that?
Yeah, I think so. Yes.
Yeah, I'm on board.
Yeah, I'm okay with the premise. We'll see how they deliver. I'm okay with the premise, though.
The premise sounds pretty fantastic. I think Cena has become very self-aware that he is a kind of a meme icon, I guess would be a way to put it right now. And
you just steer into that for sure.
Yeah, and Nanjiani is pretty fantastic. He's great in Silicon Valley. I didn't get to see it was The Big Sick. I haven't seen it yet, but Tyler, didn't you see that one? Big Sick.
I did see that one.
I hear great things about it. And that was actually on that article we were referencing earlier from Screen Rant, was one of the ones that had a huge percentage in terms of earning because it was very low budget and did pretty good nationally. Got a lot of recognition out there kind of ahead of time. And I know the Draft House theaters got really behind it and pushed it out there. So looking forward to that. But he's a pretty funny actor. I think it could be a great buddy cop movie. Then again, it could fail miserably because, Kevin Smith directing Bruce Willis in a buddy cop film seemed like it would have gone great too, but that didn't pan out quite that well. So we've talked a lot about movies. One thing, I think it might happen this week, it might happen the week before, but we didn't record. So a big thing was Netflix finally drops the full trailer for the Punisher series. Did you guys check that out?
I did, and it is dark as fuck.
Yeah, they hold nothing back in that. He's going to murder everybody.
There are a lot of bullets killing and shooting people. There's a lot of blood in the trailer. A lot of blood.
Well, I mean, that's right where you want it to be, right? I mean, it's not, what were the imprint with all those guys? I mean, Punisher and Ghost Rider, and I mean, they
Marvel's
weren't
Knights.
Yeah, they weren't the lighthearted superheroes. They were intense, and you had to, kind of accept that going into them, or else you're going to be left behind. I think it's one of the reasons so many people were disappointed by Nick Cage's Ghost Rider movies was it's kind of this might be a little campy, and like usually that's okay, but in this case, not really. Like you got to play it straight, I think.
A lot of disappointment with the Punisher movies as well. I know the Thomas Jane one.
Oh, I love Thomas Jane as the Punisher, though. I like
Yeah, if you like Thomas Jane as Punisher, but just didn't feel like you got enough Punisher in that movie, you can always check out, he self-funded a fan film called Dirty Laundry that's on YouTube. Definitely not safe for work. So it's a red band, I guess would be a way to put it.
Everyone should watch Dirty Laundry.
Yes, it's fantastic. So if you do like Thomas Jane as Punisher, which I think all three of us do, that really does it some service. But exactly, Marvel Knights, when you're adapting that material, it's got to be dark. It's got to be gritty. It's honestly, it's got to be rated R. It's got to be violent. It's got to be. and they failed miserably on the movies, but it looks like Netflix has done a great job here getting this ready. The big kicker was, though, the date at the end of the trailer, all kind of scratched out, that not really saying what it is. It just said 2017. That's the only thing you can see. So we know we're getting Punisher sometime this fall, but we still have no clue when it's going to happen. Is Netflix really going to be that ballsy and drop it without giving us a heads up? Are they, do you guys think they're just going to drop it one Thursday night or Friday night and it's just going to be there?
Yeah, why not? I mean, can you think of a better, like, a better marketing strategy for something that exists in an online space? When that hits, the number of posts on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, specifically referencing that, and I'm sure you'll see hashtag Punisher, hashtag Punisher killing everything, hashtag Punisher kicks ass, hashtag Punisher rated R, whatever, trending all over all of the social medias the day that happens. Because somebody's going to be awake at, you know, 2 a.m. when it hits, when they just try to like slide it out there and they sign into their Netflix and all of a sudden it's big, bold right across the top. Like, hey, watch the Punisher now. And it's going to explode. You're going to wake up on a Friday morning and be like, oh, good God, this has happened.
Yeah, I'm waiting for that Friday morning to when I log into Facebook and see, and I'm going to be like, I'm sick. Yep. I need to stay out from work today. that just happened. In,
boss.
Got some sick days in my pocket there. So, I would be. It's a great way to do it. It's something, because exactly, you're not charging anybody. You're not trying to get people to a theater. You're not trying anything. Everybody's already got Netflix. They're going to watch it when it drops. The only thing that I'm asking Netflix, if anybody from Netflix that has decision power, which I doubt you do, is listening to us, obviously give us a good enough time window between that and Stranger Things season two so we can finish Punisher and then get to Stranger Things. Because the worst thing that could happen is dropping it. I don't think they'd ever do this, but dropping those the same weekend. Because then, man, that week, all my plans for that weekend are gone. If that happens. If they're gone pretty much already for Stranger Things season two. But if you drop both of those in the same weekend or same time period, I'm not leaving the house for 3 days easy.
True story.
So if you haven't checked it out, we do have that posted over at Project Nerd, the Punisher trailer. We did get that up. We do post a few things still here and there. So exciting. A lot of big things happening in October, as we mentioned, you know, on Netflix. So obviously a lot of people believe Punisher is going to happen in October, but Stranger Things, the weekend right before Halloween, perfect timing for season two to drop. Getting pretty stoked for that. We're just a few weeks away from that now. It's pretty exciting stuff. So
the best thing I've seen is since it, so the main character, I guess, you know, kind of the main character in Stranger Things there, Finn Wolfhard is also in it, one of the kids, and he plays Richie. So if you've read the books or seen the original movie, Richie, you know, they call him Trash Mouth, stuff like that. He swears a lot for a kid. He swears a lot for an adult, but, you know, especially swears a lot for a kid. And apparently during the filming of season two Stranger Things, he like had just become Richie after filming it. And so he was swearing a lot on the set, and they had to get him to stop swearing in his lines and stuff like that. And so that was one of the better things I've read about Stranger Things season two coming up.
Also, did anyone watch that new, what's the new sitcom with Bobby Moynihan, Me, Myself, and I? So the kid, what's the kid from It, that's the mom's the hypochondriac's got the inhaler. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, Eddie.
So it's a weird, like, conceit of the TV. I haven't watched it yet, but I've heard really good things. The conceit of it is it's telling the story of one guy at three different points in his life, at like 12 years old, at like 40 years old, and at like 60 years old. And the kid version of him is the kid who plays Eddie. And then the like 40-year-old version of him is Bobby Moynihan. And then the adult version, I mean, like the retired version of him is John Larroquette. And it looks pretty interesting. So the trailers make it look fun.
Yeah.
But Netflix, October, Stranger Things, season two. If you don't own it, Donnie Darko drops like in the middle of October as well. So that's coming to Netflix. quite a number of things. There's a lot of websites out there. We used to post it. I'd advertise that we do it, but I'm not going to get around to posting on our site what's coming in October. Maybe we'll get to it for November. I don't know. But you can find it online. That Google thing's a great thing. But anyways, speaking of social media trending with the Punisher and everything like that, probably perfect timing then for Twitter to test now doubling its character limit, 280 characters instead of 140. So did you guys see that this week?
I did not see that.
It's too many. That, like, their whole thing was that you had to be kind of short and succinct. It kind of keep cruising. Like, I don't, it really seems like they're just going away from what they normally do, or like what made them to be like everybody else. But if they're like everybody else, why does anybody use Twitter? I'll just use everybody else.
Yeah, because Twitter's still too fast for me, so I might as well use everything else. A lot of feedback making fun of it, really. I wouldn't say angry about it, but making fun of it more. There was one tweet, I think Nerdist shared a bunch of tweets, and one of them said, Twitter is doubling tweet length to 280 characters. No one has ever read a tweet and thought, please go on. So exactly, it seems like an interesting time to do it. I know there's been a lot of talk in 2017 about, Twitter's differentiators, like what is it doing to differentiate itself anymore? Like it's just not keeping up, I guess would be the way to put it. And as Instagram, Snapchat, and all those ones kind of pick up steam, it's taking away from Twitter. And I don't know if this is a move to try to gain people back, to get people more excited on the platform again, or what's going on. But 280 characters, it's rolled out right now to a select group. And it's just, I think it's just a random group, but they probably had reason to select a certain people. To test it out. And then if all goes well, I guess they're going to roll it out to everybody. We'll see. But yeah, 280 characters.
I don't know. There's only one thing that happened on Twitter in the last couple of days that I noticed or paid attention to. And that is people tweeting about early screenings of Blade Runner 2049.
Which has had very positive.
Every one of them I've read has been made it sound like it's the greatest thing ever. In fact, multiple people have said it's may or may not be better than the original, which
Heather, did you watch the,
I have not short? Which one is that? Is that the animated one, or is that
No, that's the live action one.
There's like four different like weird little shorts out there. So there's the one, right. Is that the Jared Leto one?
That's the Jared Leto one. That's supposed
With Benedict Wong.
Right. It's supposed to kind of bridge between the two movies.
So there's another one that just came out. That's an animated one. Or an anime one, and it's made by, I want to say this right, so I'm going to have to pull it up. It is...
While he's pulling that up, Adam, I'm gonna need to ask you a favor. You said there's like four of them. Need you to drop those links in our Facebook group conversation at some point this week so I can check those out before, because I haven't watched any of them.
We can do it.
I know there's some out there, but I need to...
Yeah, well, like the Jared Leto one's put, like it's out there from the studio. I mean, it is... I'm pretty sure it's official. Like, hey, this is a thing that occurred in between the end of Blade Runner and the beginning of Blade Runner 2049.
The
animated one takes place in 2022. It's called Blade Runner Blackout 2022. It's available in full on Crunchyroll because it's anime. Because Shinichiro Watanabe, the guy who made Cowboy Bebop, is the one who made this.
Yeah, but you have to have Crunchyroll to watch it? Is that what you're saying?
I'm sure there are other places you can find it.
Hey, Iggy, there's this thing called the internet where stuff gets places where it's not supposed to be, and you can totally find it there and watch it, even though you don't have access to it where it's really supposed to be.
I know, that's why I'm starting
Rick and Morty season 3. If you're a big anime fan and you have access to Crunchyroll, you can watch it right now, at this second. So, but it looks...
I can't watch it right now because I'm on a podcast. And I don't have Crunchyroll.
Tyler, what?
What's up?
So Laura and I, Alien Covenant came back out on, or was released on Blu-ray, or you know, on the streaming sites. And so we were rewatching all of that, and we're trying to get some timeline stuff down. So I hopped online to pull up some timelines to get the years for the occurrences of all the Alien movies. And I stumbled across a website, the original Alien and Blade Runner, obviously both being made by Ridley Scott, that put them in the same worlds.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so like Blade Runner being a precursor to the androids that show up in Alien. And I thought, well, that's really a very, you know, it frames the stories being told in kind of a different light if you accept them as occurring in the same, not, you know, not just the same universe, but like they both take place on Earth. And so in Blade Runner's future, you get a Weyland-Yutani corporation that uses androids to go out into space.
So what year do they say that the first Alien took place?
Well, the first one is something like 20, gosh, I can't remember. It's like 2082 or 20.
Okay.
I was going to say 84. So it's something, it's Alien Prometheus. They don't count Alien vs. Predator or anything like that as part of the official.
So game. The earliest
earliest one is Prometheus.
Be 20, but then like the 2080s, 2090s,
somewhere around there.
Okay. Yeah, I can almost buy that then, because like if they were too close, because the first Blade Runner is 2019, which I feel like if they were any closer than that, it would be too much.
Prometheus is dated, yeah, 2089.
Okay, that makes sense. So 80, so 9, so 70 years from there to. From Blade Runner to there. That could kind of make sense. The only reason I say that is because obviously the Tyrell Corporation, you know, created the replicants. They're up to like the Nexus 6 by 2019. And there's a very, I mean, people have very strong feelings about them. They're not allowed on Earth. Like it would take many years for any of that to, for none of that to like slip into the Alien universe. And then for the Tyrell Corporation to be gone and Weyland.
Yeah, the Alien Anthology Wikia page that they have set up has actually, when you're looking at the list of films for it, it includes the Blade Runner films. So it has those included on here.
That may be the one that I found, yeah.
They put them in order, and it's got Blade Runner and then a number of things. And then, yeah, Blade Runner 2049, Prometheus, Alien Covenant, the prologues, and then Alien Covenant, Alien, yeah. So it's even got all the short films and everything like that. And then they even have a built out timeline to where, yeah, Sir Peter Whalen is born 1990, 2019 events of Blade Runner. Yeah. So they have a whole timeline built out here.
It was wild. I mean, I just stumbled across it as I was looking on my cell phone. I'm like, huh, this is interesting. I want to talk to some of my folks about this, you guys being my folks. So
I'm usually like when people try to mash this stuff up together, I'm usually annoyed by it, but I'm not totally opposed to this one. But it's still a little bit weird. They're far enough apart, age, like year wise, that I'm probably okay with it. If they were closer than that, I would not be okay with it. The Pixar movies don't take place in the same universe. Stop saying that.
I'd be really interested to see if you get a a Weyland logo in the background of 2049.
2049.
Yeah, it'd be pretty interesting. See, according to that site that Iggy was looking at, if I remember correctly. He founded Weyland Corporation like a couple years before the events of Blade Runner, because he was something like 22 or
2012. Yeah, so like, Weyland Corp is founded. Yeah, then 2019, the events of Blade Runner.
Right. So by the time of 2049, it'd be a big enough corporation. It'd been around for 30 years that.
This timeline has enough detail that it even has 2023. Peter Weyland gives his TED Talks and then has the link to the TED Talk thing, the video that they had, the viral marketing.
How long does Peter Weyland live then?
Well, that's the whole point of Prometheus, is that he is going out there to save his life, essentially. So 2089, he is within
99.
He's within months of dying. Yeah. Essentially.
Well, I'm just saying, how long did he end up? I mean, obviously it's the future. I'm just wondering, because he was.
So he lives to 99. Because he's born in 1990 and Prometheus takes place in 2089. He's in Prometheus. And I mean, he dies at the end of Prometheus.
Yes, he dies. Spoilers.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. No warnings on that. Prometheus has been out for a few years at this point.
I think we're okay.
We already have Alien Covenant out. When the next movie's already come out, it's time that it's like, okay.
We're past spoiler notice.
Say those spoilers without a heads up for it. But yeah, he would have been 99 then in his passing. And the assumption, as Adam pointed out, is that he's dying. So it's not just he dies because of the events in the movie. He was pretty much on his way to die anyways. They cryogenically froze him they froze him for space travel with everybody else. So he might have even died a year or two before that if he wouldn't have been frozen. So
Looks like he made it. He looks like he made it all the way to 2093, according to this.
Yeah.
Major happenings in the Prometheus explanation.
But then they actually get there because of the space travel. He was asleep that whole, like, for the whole space travel. They all were, and, you know, it takes a long time to.
So is he 99, or is he actually older because he was frozen all those years? So I don't know, or he was in sleep.
Depends on how fast they're traveling. Yeah, that's the bigger question.
Yeah, that's there. All right, so we're gonna have to dedicate, after Blade Runner 2049 comes out, like a whole podcast just to this whole theory of Blade Runner and Alien coming
out together. It's interesting, yeah.
We're going to have to dive in, because we're diving into it right now, and we're running out of time. We haven't even gotten to the fact that we have a comic convention this weekend, which super excited about. So Rocky Mountain Con, our last show of the year here in Denver, Colorado. It's September 29th through October 1st. So chances are, by the time you're listening to this, we are at Rocky Mountain Con. 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. is preview night on Friday. So exciting stuff. We've got most of our comics. We've got great things going on. A lot to talk about. We'll be doing some panels, I believe. I haven't seen the panel schedule yet, but I believe that was our exchange, that we're doing panels in exchange for a booth. So I don't know. Hopefully we're doing some panels. I know talks about the business one and the Kickstarter one and everything like that. But it's a fun little show in Denver. All the local Denver talent that we know comes out. Pretty cool, because IDW will be out there doing artist portfolio reviews. So that's a pretty big deal for Rocky Mountain Con, kind of huge. And of course, the big news this year is that it combined with Tacticon, which is a gaming convention that traditionally happened Labor Day weekend, but moved back a month to meet with Rocky Mountain Con. So it's going to be a gaming con / comic convention. So it should be pretty interesting how that plays out and everything. A lot of people, but good guest list. Dougie Jones, of course, going to be there. That's pretty exciting. But check it out. Of course, I think RockyMountainCon.com, but you can find us. I don't know our booth number. We haven't been assigned booth numbers yet, but the floor is not that big, so you'll be able to find us pretty easily. But we'll be there. And we want to see it. But with that, you guys have done a few Rocky Mountain Cons. What do you think? What's your favorite appropriate Rocky Mountain Con moment? We have to go with appropriate, because I know there are some not appropriate ones in there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that one's easy. That would be, was that your first year? We had our good friend George out there with us. We all go out to eat, got some pho, and we're hanging out at the table, and our waitress is super nice. When you go to Asian restaurants, you tend to get a lot of food, and people share and that kind of stuff. And none of us shared, because we'd been working all day. And our good friend George, who we love, happened to finish his meal first. And our waitress walks by, stops, turns around, grabs his plate, and very enthusiastically says, "Oh, you ate all of your food." And then picks his plate up and walks away. And all of us
made fun of George.
Absolutely lose our shit, because all the rest of us were going to eat all of our food. That wasn't it wasn't like George was by himself eating all of his food. All of us ate all of our food. It just so happened that she said that to him. And that was, the show is fantastic, but when I think back on it, that's the memory that always jumps out at me for Rocky Mountain Gun.
For sure. That was quite a dinner. Tyler, you got any fun Rocky Mountain Con memories?
Yeah, I'm trying to think, and he's hearing me listen to this story, and I realize I wasn't at that dinner, because I'm like, I don't remember any of that. But I'm trying to think what else Rocky Mountain Con.
Yeah, that was the one you dipped out on us to go to. You went to, that was right after the Draft House had opened there.
How did you go out with Beth?
I think you and your friend went out and saw a movie, I think. I can't remember.
We did something. I don't think we went to the Draft House, but we did something. I don't remember what it was.
While you're thinking, I would definitely say mine is, we brought out Katrina Law 2 years ago for them, and great time with her. She was a blast. Her and her husband both were fantastic to talk to. We had the booth right next to them, so we got to hang out with them all weekend, just chatting it up, talking. And then, of course, Jesse, our own Jesse, did a interview with her, the video interview that you can find over at projectnerd.com, which was pretty exciting. But that was pretty cool. And that was right around the time we had launched our publishing stuff too. So we didn't have really any of our publishing stuff there. We had announced stuff and had Kickstarters, so we had information out there, and there was a lot of interest, so it was pretty exciting. But yeah, that was fun. Rocky Mountain Con's always fun. It's a very laid back show, so we're always hanging out with people, talking to people. Like I said, everybody we know in the Denver area is there. They have the Colorado movie cars, so you get all of our friends that have their cars out there, and then you get like I said, good selection of the comic creative teams out there. Unfortunately, they won't be there this year, but they'll have booths. People like Jason Mintz and of course Stephen Pluawa and Chad Harden. But always, yeah, fun show, and we did some panels for them last year, and like I said, we're hopefully doing them again this year. Tyler, no memories.
I only went to the first one, and I haven't been back since then, just because it hasn't worked out for my schedule. But what did I'm trying to?
Yeah, think. I'm bummed that I'll be missing that one. It was the sky. I mean, from that first year, for something specific to the con, was the folks that stopped by to get their picture taken with the full Daedric Skyrim armor and like the.
No, it's yeah. Tessa.
Oh my gosh.
There was some really good.
Tessa Umberto. Tessa Christine Cosplay is her cosplay name. But yeah, Tessa Umberto, pretty awesome. And she's prepping something big for this year too, so she's been working on it. I don't know, we'll see what she pops out.
I think that's probably the one thing I remember, is there was some really good cosplay that first year Rocky Mountain Con for being a smaller con, because that was one of the first ones we did behind the cosplay at. Like, we had the little booth set up with the black curtain, and I interviewed some of them. There were some really good costumes that year.
It is, yeah, we had a cool, we had that photo booth set up and did some video interviews. Yeah, it was pretty fun. But yeah, we've always been a good part of Rocky Mountain Con, the Tim and the team that put it on, good guys. So if you're in Denver this weekend, come check us out. We'll be there. It's super affordable show too. It's super affordable. And great artist Hallie, like I said, and some good celebrity guests. So come check it out. Project Nerd Publishing all set up there. But with that, we are pretty much out of time. So spend a few minutes real quick on our final thoughts of the week. We covered a lot. We covered a lot, guys. I don't know if there's anything else left to cover, but I don't know. You guys got some final thoughts?
I do. I'll start. Slightly somber, you know, our thoughts are out there to everybody who's dealt with crazy weather the past month and a half or so. Certainly any of our folks that listen down in Puerto Rico who have family down in Puerto Rico, our thoughts are with you guys for sure. Slightly happier note, much happier note, play Destiny 2, pick a faction. There are correct answers to which faction you pick. Choose wisely. Let us know what you pick. If you're needing a clan, Tyler will start one with you because he's clanless. Poor little homeless Tyler. But get into it. Have some fun. It's a really good game, and things are really starting to pick up for it now. So there's lots to do. And I was on today, again, before we hopped on. And, you know, over the summer, my friends list had slowly started to peter out with a number of folks that were online. But the past couple of weeks, it's been pretty consistent, over 50 or 60 folks online and playing at pretty much any given time. And certainly you get to the weekend, that number jumps up another 20 or 30 folks. So it's pretty wild, the number of people that are on and playing right now. So go and have fun, play games with your friends, make new friends, be sweet.
All right. Video games, of course, with your friends. Tyler, some final thoughts for us?
So I'm going to continue to play Destiny. And then I also got a little obsessed, and I've done this before with any sort of like book series. If I jump into a book series when there's already like 6, 7, 8, 9 of them out there, especially if they're like quick reads and kind of fun, has tendency to happen with urban fantasy, I will kind of obsess over them. So I don't know if I had read any last time we recorded 2 weeks ago. I mean, I think I read maybe one, but a friend of mine recommended the October Day series by Shannon McGuire, who I'd never read any of them before, but I had read, she has under a pen name Mira Grant, she'd wrote in some sci-fi ones like the Newsflesh series that I really enjoyed. So I picked up the first October Day series 2.5 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. I've now read all 11 of them, and they're really fun. So I would recommend those books to people. You should probably pick one up and try one.
Yeah, you were, I think you had finished the first one and were getting ready to start the second one, or were a couple chapters into it, and you were excited about getting back to it. Because I remember you talking about that for sure. And since then, you've gone through 11. That's
Yeah, I've read all 11 of them now.
Where have you found time for Destiny? Where has Destiny fit into this? Because I don't.
They're each only like maybe 350, 400 pages. Like, they're not long books. So
that's only, yeah, what, like 4,000,
4,400. That'd probably pages be then. The longest book that like a lot of adults that you would talk to had read in the past 5 years, if I had to guess. 400 pages is.
Long books is like later this year when like the next like Stormlight Archive book comes out, and it'll be like 1,200 or 1,300 pages long. And they're quick reads. Like, they're not like dense prose. Like, they're first person urban fantasy fairies and stuff like that. So, I mean, I can read one of them in 4 or 5 hours. So, I don't know.
All right. There you go. So Tyler's doing a lot of reading. Sure. All right. Well, with that, I'm going to close this out. I get my final thoughts would have been the comic convention. Like I said, come see us at Rocky Mountain Con. Pretty excited for that. Stay tuned in October for some big Project Nerd publishing news. We'll follow up with that in later episodes. But other than that, we are out of time this week. Till episode 142, which would be next time. We will catch you. Same nerd time, same nerd channel. Bye, folks.
Bye, buddy.
Put your pants on, sir.